So I'm used to doing it in a very different way. So I'm going to try this. Everyone should have this as well, but I'm going to work with the screen on my thing. Okay, the title is An Archaeologist, Rationalist, and Mystic Walk into a Seder. Also, thank you guys very, very much for coming out metaphorically, digitally, whatever you want to call it right now. I know everyone is extremely busy. I thought I'd have tons of downtime. That is not at all the case. So the caveat to this year's title is that I'm not an archaeologist, I'm not a rationalist, and I'm not a mystic. However, I want to walk through something that I saw, and it's an idea that can kind of get us into the Yetzias Mitzrayim mindset, and particularly I think is very apropos for literally this time period of the pandemic where we're using things like Zoom for what would have been an in-person cheer. And to start, if you have any questions, insight, please just unmute yourself and comment or ask. I'd like to ask, what is this picture? That wasn't implied to mute yourself, particularly when I'm going to ask a question. What is this picture? Anyone want to suggest? What is this thing? Don't all speak at once. Okay. I would have thought, and as Rabbi Dr. Joshua Berman suggests, you look at this and you would have thought it is the Mishkan, right? It is the same thing in the back of the old stone chumash, right? They have really nice pictures now, the new one. The old one has really like kind of pictures like this. I would have thought that. In an article he wrote, he uses this as an indication of just archaeological evidence. He's an Egyptologist, teaches at Bar Ilan. He points out this is the framework of the Paro's chamber. When they would go out to war, they would have the battle compound, they would have the formation they go in. This is the Pharaoh's chamber with the exact same directions, the exact same dimensions almost, at least proportionately, to the Mishkan. When I first saw this, I was not sure. He's using it to like really show. There's a lot of archaeological indications of the timing of the Torah, Matan Torah, being what we say it is. On the other hand, I was extraordinarily uncomfortable because the implication is that we're basing the Mishkan on Paro's battle compound. Like, I'm not exactly sure what a battle compound is. It doesn't sound like something that I want to go and daven at. So that should make us a little bit uncomfortable. And I would like to put this year on the question of how should that make us feel, right? We have a pasuk that says, "Va'asu li mikdash b'shachandi b'socham," right? It's a clear pasuk. The Torah is telling us we should make a Mishkan. It should not be just like we had this crazy idea. Like, oh, the Mitzrim, who we just defeated, had this thing, and it was a cool little shape. I really like the architecture of it. We should do that too, right? That is not what we're supposed to be doing. Kodesh Baruch Hu told us to, but at the same time, the same time period, there was, in fact, a shape. There was a structure that very, very, very similarly mimicked or looked like the Mishkan, and the inner chambers, the outer chambers, the courtyard, and the paths, the chatzer, right? The whole everything. So, what are the implications of a similarity between the Mishkan and Paro's battle camp for our understanding of the mitzvot? Does anyone want to suggest an answer before we go on through the process I would like to take us through? Okay. Don't feel obliged. So I would like to look at three sources. Two of them are going to address the question somewhat heads-on, although I don't think they were aware of this. And one of them is going to sort of put the two of them together. The first source I would like to look at is the Rambam. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim says what is somewhat strange at first glance. Essentially says the entire concept of the Mishkan, the entire concept of the Karbonos, was essentially weeding us off of Avodah Zarah. It was what everyone was used to. It's how everyone did everything. And if we were to try to stop doing Avodah Zarah so quickly, we'd have withdrawal, not a chance in the world would it survive. So he kind of like weans us off step by step of the same way of doing things, but just do them differently. Right? It's quotes. He says, "Bnei Yisrael were commanded to devote themselves to the service." I quote the Moron Vuchim in English simply because the Hebrew would be way too philosophical, and it's not original anyway. Once you're giving a translation, you might as well give one that understand. So Bnei Yisrael were commanded to devote themselves to the service, right? You should serve Hashem, your God, right? You shall serve him, all these different things. He says, but the custom was in those days, general among all men, the general mode of worship in which Bnei Yisrael brought up. He often quotes these historical sources, often different things from that time period, which we no longer have. When you go into the obvious way, the everyone knew to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu was animal sacrifices, sacrificing animals in those temples, which had certain images, to bow down to those images, to burn incense before them, right? All things we're familiar with from Sefer Vayikra. The Lubavitch Rebbe actually has, I think it's a Sicha, who talks about how the sacrifices were like this intuitive, naturalistic way of serving Hashem. Hence, we see them way before Matan Torah. So they were devoted to the service in these temples, erected to the stars, the mazalos, as explained to us. So it is according to the wisdom and plan of God, displayed in all of creation, that he did not command us to give up and discontinue these matters of service. He knew that if we just stopped doing animal sacrifices, stopped the incense, stopped the central place to serve Hashem, stopped the temple services, there's no way we're going to survive. We're not going to like make it. We're not going to be able to say, oh, I can definitely do this type of vodat God, whatever it be, whether it be to Hashem, whether it be to some other avodah zarah. They're not going to be able to leave cold turkey like that. For to obey such a commandment, it would have been contrary to the nature of man, who generally cleaves to that which is used to. Whatever that is they're doing, they have to have some way of serving him. We can't just kind of expect someone to just completely change their life, an entire nation, to completely change their life structure. They're coming from the society of Mitzrayim. They're coming from the culture in which some of these things are very, very common. This broader culture, it's very, very common. To tell them to stop doing animal sacrifices entirely, that's not going to work. To tell them stop having a centralized place to worship your God, who is now me, not me, but Hashem, that's not going to work. It was in those days, right, the same impression as a prophet would make as a present. If he called out the service of God and told us in his name, we should stop praying for him, not fast, not seek his help in a time of trouble. If someone would tell a Jewish person that, they would think they're absolutely out of their mind. At best, a Navi Shaker. No way would they ever listen to them. Said, for someone to come and say, you have to do your religious service, you have to do your rituals, but they're totally, totally different. There's no more sacrifices. Not a chance would they have listened. So what's the alternative then? Right, he doesn't want us doing the Avodah Zarah. So is he transferred to his service that which had formerly served as a worship of created beings, of those things imaginary and unreal, and commanded us to serve him in the same manner to build him a temple, right? V'asuli mishkan v'shachanti v'socham. He quotes the very pasuk that we have to make an altar erected to his name. So there is indication. One of my rabbis, Rabbi Carmi from YU, has a whole piece where he talks about the Rambam and finding historical and archaeological evidence of some of his opinions in the Moreh Nevuchim. I have no indication that the Rambam knew about Ramses II's battle compounds, but presumably he would have said exactly. They weren't necessarily the best architects. When Hashem gave us the blueprint, when he gave us how you're supposed to build the Mishkan, he copied off what they knew. He doesn't want to tell them to build this whole new type of structure. They said, what you have, and just apply it to what we're doing now, right? Leave the Paro thing, leave the war thing, and build a Mishkan. The Mishkan's going to go out with you to war also. The Mishkan will be where you serve. The Mishkan will not have Paro, who deified himself. It'll have myself, my Shechina there, v'shechanti b'sochem. It'll be terrific. You'll transfer everything you saw in Mitzrayim to Avodas Hashem. It'll be great, and you'll go that way. I don't think you would have any problem with that suggestion. That is the what I'll call the rationalist mode of thinking to this point. However, what I think is probably the more normative approach in how we look at it, right? We look at the Midrashim all over the place. The certain things in the Mishkan are representative of different qualities of Avodas Hashem, of different midos, of chesed, of chachma, of Shiras, right? The menorah is where it is because it represents chachma, and the candles, the Midrash, the candles point to certain directions because of where they are. There's tremendous significance in every single facet of that. Further, the Ramban fundamentally takes problem with this. The Ramban, and I think this is probably the more normative approach when we look at the Tamei HaMitzvos, is that there's a inherent value to having a Mishkan. The Mishkan was not just like, okay, you're doing this, I can't tell you to stop, let's transfer to something else. It's, no. Hashem gave us the Torah. Hashem is telling us what to do anyway. It's kofim aleha maharkigis. They're forcing them to accept the Torah. They said nasha benishma. Why do you think they're so attached to what they're stuck to? Why do you think they wouldn't be able to transfer all these other mitzvahs we're leaving? Kashrus is weird, right? You're telling them to completely change their dietary needs. They're completely changing everything else about their life. They're so attached to like killing sheep. That's what they can't let go of. It's all the other things. You look through Tanakh. It doesn't seem to be like the mode of serving Hashem that they have a problem with. It's not even transferring it properly. It's Mamash Avodah Zarah. So if they're going to have a problem with Mamash Avodah Zarah anyway, just give them however he wants the service to be. He obviously wanted the service to be this way. He also finds tremendous meaning in like sacrificing yourself, representative of the animal. So he has a totally different approach. That's what I'd like to look at here. Erban, on the spot when we're talking about the Mishkan, this also relates to whether or not there's a different machlokas about why we had the Mishkan. Is it result of the Cheda Egel or irrespective of or aside from? A different, very, very related topic. The Ramban takes the same approach here, where he does not think it's a result of the Cheda Egel, like Rashi says, but that it was always the plan, and it happens to be that there was something that we needed a kapara for, but that's not why. It just was very convenient. So the Ramban says, Hinei ikar ha-chafetz b'mishkan hu makom menuchas hashchina. The Mishkan was not to try to wean us off from Avodah Zarah. It was not to give us some representation of a place to go. It was a place that in this physical world, we can have somewhere that the Shechina can dwell. Shu'a Aron, right? In the Aron, between the Kruvim, Kamosha Amar, Medati L'chasham, Medibarti Itcha Me'al Kaparas, right? Hashem speaks to Moshe. The Nevuah comes through that place. The Shechina was resting there. And he says, the Sod HaMishkanhu, the point of having somewhere that you can have the Shechina, that you can encounter the pure spirituality, shiyu hakavod asher shachan al har Sinai shochan alive benister. The same experience we had at Har Sinai, and the Ramban elsewhere talks about having to take that experience with us wherever we go and to really, really feel that. This is the same experience which we were so committed to. The reason we don't need to be weaned off of what we were doing is because it was so self-evident at Har Sinai. It's the kolos, the barakim, the kvod Hashem. We saw that. We experienced that. We don't need anything else. Whatever Hashem says at this point, nasa v'nishma, we're going to do it. We want that experience. We want that reminder, that beacon of light to be something that we can take with us wherever we go. Once we get to Eretz Yisrael, we are going to have it in a centralized place, but we want that experience to permanently be there amongst the Jewish people. Hashanah marsham, V'yishchon kvod Hashem al har Sinai, the same deal, v'yishchon, v'shechanti, the same word, we want that experience to be with us. He says, v'chasiv, v'hein, ha'inu Hashem elakenu, es kvodo, es gadlo, right? Somewhere that we can see that beauty of Hashem. The Mishkan m'kvod Hashem, male is the Mishkan, it would fill it. V'yishchon mishkan shnei pa'amim m'kvod Hashem, male is the Mishkan, it talks about that, it emphasizes that, that is the point of it. The point of it is to have that place for the Mishkan. Hashem could have done that however he wanted. If he wanted to do it through the Korbanos, if he wanted to do it through something else, today, in light of Korbanos, we still say that the Shechina went with us to Galus. It's still in our Bate Knesios, should open up very soon. But the Rambam fundamentally disagrees with the Rambam, which happens every so often, and says this is not because of some sort of attachment to the service of shechting animals. This is an inherently valuable thing. We need a Mishkan. We need somewhere we can go, somewhere centralized. We need something that we can do as an avoda. I don't care what everybody else is doing, right? If they were to jump off a bridge, would you follow them? The same thing that our parents always told us. I don't care what they're doing. It happens to be we're doing the same thing. That's very cute. Doesn't matter to me. The Ramban says this is fundamentally there. And further, we look through Sefer Bereishis. Lots of people brought korbanos way before Mitzrayim was an empire, right? Hevel, really early on in history, was bringing korbanos. Noach, the leader of Bnei Noach, was bringing korbanos. We see this is a history. This is something that we have. This is what we were always doing. So, I don't have an answer to the question. What would the Ramban, maybe I don't have an answer to the question. What would the Ramban say to Rabbi Berbing's findings, right? The Ramban would attribute the Carbonos to whoever. It doesn't really matter to him who started it, but that's what everyone was doing. Sociologically, that's what everyone was doing. He doesn't care where it started. The Ramban says, no, I don't care where it started because Hashem's saying to do it. He would look at this, and he'd probably have that same discomfort that I initially had of, that's really weird. Either you could say it copied them. Maybe he's stretching the similarities. I saw the original hieroglyph or the original drawing on the wall. It does match the proportions. Rabbi Berman says it does, but it's potentially open to other interpretations. I'm taking it for granted that that is in fact similar as a Talmid Chacham and archaeologist, where I am neither. Okay, but the Ramban would say, even if there's a similarity, it's circumstantial. Maybe they copied us. Maybe it just happens to be, for some reason, Hashem wanted it that way, but not because of that similarity. There's no copying here. There's no continuation of some pagan practice that we're applying to Hashem. That's not what we're doing. We're doing something because it's intrinsically valuable. And Hashem says, for whatever spiritual, Kabbalistic reason, this is necessary, that's what it would be. Those are, I would say, the two competing sides. What I'd like to do now is take a very, very famous source that is never really seen in its entirety, and I want to say bridge the gap between the two of them through this. The source is the Orach Chaim. There is a famous idea that in Mitzrayim, we were at the 49th level of Tumah. And he says that if we were to get to the 50th level of Tumah, there's no turning back. There's no way. We can't go any further. Hashem had to take us out of Mitzrayim early, because we were so close to that 50th level of Tumah, and we were going to completely be lost forever. There's a whole idea. I believe it's this, he quotes it also, but some of the other Chassidic rabbis, I think Sfas Emes quotes it, that the connected that is the 49 days of Sphira to the 50th level. There's a positive aspect of 50. On the other side, the 50th level of Chochmah. He addresses this. There's this idea that we are used to. There's a lot more in the Orach Chaim that we don't see as frequently. So to go through that, and I think this will bridge the gap between us, that the Ramban and the Rambam can both be right and take a very powerful message for us today. The Orach Chaim says, this is the, I would say, the probably most popular Kabbalistic, not of the Achronim, if you were to look through a Perish on the Chumash, not like a Vortlach, nothing against Vortlach, but a Perish explaining the Chumash, with the Orach Chaim is place to go. In the Mikras Kedolos, he says, "Hine lama shekadam lanu ki ikar hagalos hu levara nitzosos." Why do we come so early? Why do we leave early? The whole point of the galos, he says, was to redeem the sparks stuck there. There was a reason we're going into galos. Tosafos says is also we were going there to redeem something. There was some quality, not like a cultural thing, but a spiritual thing stuck in Mitzrayim. We're supposed to take it out and elevate it to make it good. These things, these sparks of holiness are stuck in the 50 levels of Tumah. And if that's not totally clear to you, probably it's not supposed to be. He mentions it many, many times. If you're going to take them out early, the Orach Chaim is saying you have a certain amount of time it takes to do this job. You're supposed to elevate some sparks stuck in Tumah. You're supposed to find these little things and use them for good. Use them for good. Find these things. Redeem them. That's the point of going to Mitzrayim, is the Kura Barzel, to purify ourselves. It's supposed to take a certain amount of time. If you don't give it that time, it's not going to work. The other day I tried to bake bread in a bread maker. And I don't know if it's that I didn't take enough time. I think it was more like matzah than it was bread. It did not rise. I actually was very inspired by it. Like, this is probably what they looked like. It was a brick of bread. It wasn't flat, but it was totally, I took it out too early, or it didn't let it rise, or something else went wrong. If you take them out too early, they're not going to have their job. The Kura Barzel, the iron furnace, if you take it out early, it's not going to actually do its job. The Kodemze, Motziam Kodemze, Hayamafsidim Birachelechahu. You're not going to actually get to the whole point of it. It's going to be wasted. Right? 210 years down the drain because we didn't wait the rest of the time. How can Hashem take them out of Mitzrayim so early? I don't care what level they're on. They're not doing their job. But hey, the she'im Hashem hasigu b'vchinas chalusam hakalu b'moshe nizyachesh b'shem imo hasagas memtesh shari bina. Right, and the whole point anyway. Don't worry, they'll get out. They're going to end with Moshe. Moshe's going to take them to the 49 levels of Bina, of understanding. It'll be great. It'll be fine. They're going to undo the problems that happened. Tam. Shelo hasig shar chamishim hu letzad she'ein musag ela b'hashtadlos b'masik. Okay, that's a different point of why he can't get to the 50th point. He explains that later on. Not for now. Letzad she'Yisrael lo nichnasu b'chamishim shari tuma levaro so. This is the reason that they could not go to the 50th level of tuma. Lo hasigu b'chinas hakodesh shekenegdo. To not to bring it up to the level of holiness, of taking something that was used for bad and using it for good, redeeming it, making its purpose in the world meaningful again by capturing its essence and bringing it up for good. They weren't able to do that. They never succeeded at doing that. We're promised though, right? At this point, he's sort of quoting what happened at that time period. He says at that point, when they were taken out early because they didn't get to do their job, they weren't able to get to that 50th level of really redeem the world, of bring it to something special. In the future, we're promised that Hashem's going to bring us to that point where we can get there, we can take the deepest depths of Tuma, of something that's impure, and elevate it, use it for something good. So the Kabbalistic idea, where you take something physical and use it for good, you redeem what could have gone in either direction. Right? You have meats, you could either use it for just self-indulgence, or you can use it for Kavod Shabbos. You have wine, you could use it for something immoral or lead you a very bad path, or for Kiddush. You have leather, you can use it for whatever it is you could use it, or for tefillin. You can use something for good. They were supposed to do that in Mitzrayim. They weren't able to, but in the future, he says, Hashem is going to give us the Tars Chaim. That is the level of 50 of wisdom that'll help us. The Sigato, who Ba'amtsos Hagolios. They're going to go there through Golos, through exile, but Prat Golos Ha'achron, specifically the last exile. Anu Masiga Madaba. We're going to succeed at doing this. We're going to successfully get it up. That part is not listed. He doesn't, usually he just talks about how they had to leave early because they were going to get stuck there. He says, no, it's Chaval that they left early, right? You're right, they were going to get stuck there, but they didn't accomplish their job. And in the future, we're going to. We're going to go to a very low point. We're going to have that Yerida Sidoros. We're going to be in Galus, and then we're going to bring it up. The reason they became so a dangerous situation, the reason they were at risk of never being redeemed in the process of trying to lift up these sparks, the Bir Shar Chamishim, the Tzad Shelo Hayu B'nei Torah, Masha'en Ken Doros Ha'achronim. Right? At that point, they weren't B'nai Torah. They really had nothing. They had they had whatever traditions they had. They had the Bris Mila, they had their names, they had their clothes, but they didn't have Torah. Without Torah, without that foundation of wisdom, without that guidance, right, without that acceptance of whatever Hashem says, this is going to keep me focused, that's what I'm going to do, they're going to be swayed every direction. How are you supposed to lift up the sparks? I have no idea what to do with it. I have no idea what day I should be having my meat that's going to be good. When's it going to be bad? I'm not really sure. Do I have a mitzvah to do? I have lots of leather. I have lots of wool. I have whatever it is I have. What should I do with it? They have no idea. What's right? What's wrong? Everything is arbitrary. Everything is relative. They have no idea what they're going to do. If you try to have them do the spiritual job of lifting things up, of doing Avodas Hashem with no framework where you're just following everything else, maybe Karbanos are good, maybe Karbanos are not good. I have no idea. They're not B'nai Torah. They're not people who learned, who are committed to Torah. They're not people that could properly lift this up, do this elevation, do this service. Right? V'az, safutamu b'china satuma. They wound up making the wrong decisions. Could have been they were even sincere. They were doing it l'shma. They really wanted to do the right thing, but they had no idea what the right thing was. They weren't able to properly channel the world towards Avodas Hashem, towards Kedusha. They weren't able to properly take those sparks stuck in the levels of Tuma and use them for good. They got sucked into it, and they wound up stuck. The Or Chaim says the last generation is going to use this. They're going to have this Deabrei Torah, right? As a nation, I've commented many times, I think there's more Torah learned before all the sheer 24/7 on Zoom, not 24/7, 23 and a half, six, before all the sheer on Zoom, everyone's learning so much this generation. There's more people who are learned this generation than ever before. Numbers-wise, quality-wise, there's more availability. There's tons of Netar now. And now we have this ability to go to the Shar Chamishim of Tuma. They'll go to the deepest places of impurity, bring it up and use it for good, right? What is saving Torah learning? What is in school right now? I have a minion on Zoom. What is saving any form of communal prayer right now? What is saving all this? It's technology. It's the same technology that people very frequently rant against that can easily lead to problems. It's the same technology that has let us like lose our social connection. Suddenly the only way I have to connect with people is through technology. I'm not allowed to go to them. This, I think, is highlighting using that which is around us, using that which is very, very easily abused, used for tumah, and elevating it. It's taking it from a place that is bad and bringing it to that place as good. And we're in the Golos. We're in this position to use it because now we're B'nai Torah. I think he would say, to this big picture, right? What's the point of the Mishkan? Maybe the Mishkan was, in fact, modeled after Paro's battle chamber. And at the same time, it was inherently valuable. There's something in the battle chamber, I think the Or HaChaim would say, that the Ramban would say needs to be elevated. And doing that is you have this original plan. Hashem wanted there to be a Mishkan. He wanted there to be somewhere that you can use to serve him. He wanted somewhere for his Shekhinah. He orchestrated history in a very perfect way that there should be this framework, this plan, this architecture in the exact place that the exact people at the exact moment are going to have Matan Torah. They should be familiar with that. They should know that Kadosh Baruch Hu is on time. He can easily arrange things for there. He says, yes, they should have had a society where Korbanos are happening all the time, where they're having a central place of Avodah Zarah to learn about that, to be familiar with that, and to use it for serving Hashem. And that's not because it's weaning them off necessarily. It's not because they happen to be familiar with that. It's because Hashem put these sparks of Kedusha there, and he wants you to lift it up now. So he made B'nai Yisrael aware of it. He made them know that there's a certain framework, and it has a Kodesh HaKadoshim style thing, Lahavdil, and an inner chamber, and an outer chamber, and a Chatzar, and the courtyard, and the curtains around it. You should know about that. Because there's some chachma in that, that somehow they tapped into, somehow they utilized. Your turn now is to utilize that for Kedusha. We are now in this generation, right? Why is the first time, that happens to be a kind of chicken and the egg, why is the first time in the world, the entire world is turned off? A pandemic has screeched everywhere. It's because we're ready for it. We have the ability to survive through this. Not to diminish the challenges anyone's having, but we have more technology than they ever had historically. Why are we in a generation that has challenges with technology? Because we're supposed to use it for good, not just during a pandemic, but there's tremendous amounts of Torah learned on the internet. There's tremendous amount of connecting. My grandmother, I'm able to call, I'm able to FaceTime. She can see her great-grandchildren on a regular basis living 1,000 miles away, and we can't travel there often. She can't travel here. There's such potential for connection, for Kedusha, through the very challenges in our society. To the very things that are hard for us. On a college campus, they have lots of ideas. These ideas can all be used for good. And that's what I want to end with. This idea of channeling the good is something that Rav Kook talks about in multiple places. He talks here in, these are in the Igros. If you really want to get Rav Kook's ideas and have a lot of time to comb through, you should look at his letters. He talks about, at this point, he's, I think, discussing the beginnings of biblical criticism. And he says, "Aderech hadeos habos ayedei mechachrim." Right? These new scientists, these new philosophers, achadashim, opposed to the old ones, shehem berubam sostrim es pshitei divrei Torah. Right? They're contradicting every single thing, not just in terms of the theology of it, not just in terms of the doing the mitzvahs, but they're on a pshit level. They contradict everything. Dasi v'zehi shechol mishe da'asav yashrus. Roy Loladash, Sha'af She'ain Kol Emes Mechachas, even if it's not necessarily totally, totally obvious, but Chol Osan Chadashos. Maybe it's not so foolproof what they're saying, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Mekol Machom Ein Anachnu Chayivim Chlal L'Hachshishan. the beer, la'amud negdam. We don't have to contradict them. We don't have to fight them. We talked about this last year in the context of evolution, the age of the world. He addresses that directly. I think it might actually be in this letter. Bipnei she'ein ze klal ikar shel Torah safer lanu av uvdos peshutos ma'asim shahayu. Right? It's not a historical document. It's not something that we're trying to say why is this happening. It's a service. It's a connection to Hashem. If it happens to be that the way to connect to Hashem is necessary to wean us off of Avodah Zarah, or to mimic the battle chamber, or whatever it may be, or if it happens to be the stories he's dealing with, or in a metaphorical sense, not for now, it's not a problem. The whole point is connecting to Hashem. Hashem knows what he's giving us. Hashem knows what's in the Torah. He knows where it comes from, and that's what it is. Don't fight against it. Try to figure out what it's teaching us, what it's trying to channel you. Later on, he says, in a war of ideas, if anything tries to contradict or it seems to make you feel very uncomfortable with the Torah, where it seems to be saying, oh, you didn't really get this on your own. It's not really a holy idea. You got that from the pagans. You got that from the Mitzrayim. You got that from wherever it is. You don't have to fight with it. You can accept, not accept, but you don't have to feel bad about it. You don't have to feel scared of it. My gut feeling was, whoa, this is really weird. How can Sefer Shmos and Vayikra be modeled after something that is mimic in Mitzrayim? Like, don't worry. You don't have to contradict it. You can even roll with it. Livnot et Armon HaTorah Ma'alza. Use it to build a palace of Torah. Use it to lift Torah up. Use it to understand it better. Use it to understand our world better. Right? We're going to be elevated by that. We're not going to be people that are fighting, that look the reactionaries or radicals. We're going to be elevated. We're going to be able to deal with the world better by trying to turn ourselves off from the world, off from technology, off from different ways of connecting, off from different ideas. We're either going to be fighting, we're going to become more radicalized, or we're going to go crazy, or we're going to constantly feel this disconnect, this not being sincere with it. But avor hisra'im through this elevation, through being the bigger people, hadeos mizgalos, the real truth is going to become clear, right? By accepting it, Berman became an Egyptologist not because he wanted to study Mizraim, because he wants to elevate the Torah. That's he's explicit somewhere about that. He wants to understand Torah better that way, and he's doing that. He's revealing aspects of Torah. He's revealing, like, take it or leave it, his particular claims, but he's doing it in order to strengthen us, right? We look at something in the world, and if it's something that makes us uncomfortable, our reaction doesn't need to be turn it down. How can I use this for good? How can I find the kedusha that's stuck in that? Now I'm a bnei Torah. I'm a Ben Torah. I'm someone who lives by Torah, and that's my focus. That's my compass. How can I use this now for good? Once we're not pressured by that, mishum davar, and we can actually, if we need to, we're able to, with a full heart, if there's something really is bad, we can deal with it that way, but not as a reactionary, but as somebody that is shalom in this. So, with this, I thought it was very interesting how it turned out. The shiur was prepared way before everything turned down. But just as people in the modern world, as exposed to things in the modern world, our goal is not to fight it, not to try to avoid it, not to try to hide from it, not necessarily to accept it, or elsewhere he talks about it, or Fuchs himself talks about it. Like, don't have to accept everything everyone says. Not everything is a good idea. Not everything is mutter, not everything is kosher. But those things that are this weird middle ground that make us uncomfortable with something, don't just run from it, don't hide from it, don't try to contradict it, don't fight it. How can I use this to serve Hashem better? How can I, stuck in quarantine, get together with people from all over the area? How can I do something good with this food, with this item, with this technology, with this medicine, with this whatever it is, with this social idea, new moral idea, whatever it may be in our lives, how can I use it to find the kedusha that's in it and use it to serve Hashem better? To go into Pesach, remember who we are. Pesach is really about our identity. It was when we were born as a nation, is when we are. We're the ones that left this. We're the ones, on the one hand, that weren't B'nai Torah yet. We have to commit ourselves to learning, build up the Shavuos. But we also are, right? Historically, we are B'nai Torah. We have the ability to learn. We have the ability to walk the Shtil Zahav, to use technology, to use the world to serve Hashem, to remember that identity. That's what my purpose is, and go through our lives in that process, in that tafkid of trying to serve Hashem with everything we have. That's everybody. Thank you again for coming out, logging in, and you gained from it in your pursuits of elevating the world.
Can we ask if anybody has any questions, Rabbi? Thank you.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Okay, Josh, does that mean you have a question?
Are you raising your hand? I can't see it.
Okay, the two people you didn't know, so Josh Salzberg was here and Aura was here. And Riva wasn't here. They were both at Michlala, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if you missed my introductory praise of Michlala, but Josh, you were here last year. Hmm?
But yeah. I did, but I worked with your wife in the pharmacy, so I actually knew that she went to Michlala.
Oh, okay. Very good. Did she tell you that Yaakov Yehuda is named after Rav Kuperman?
No, she did not, but that's shocked. Really cool.
Okay. She did. She actually mentioned you because there was another girl she said that was from Mechala, and she never actually spoke about who you are as a person, but she did mention you went to Mechala. So.
Yeah.
Can he see you?
She's currently there. She's at the pharmacy right now. So.
Oh, fun. Yeah, I mean, I can turn on my video.
Yeah.
Hi.
Okay, so remember who Josh... Josh, can you turn on your video so we can tell which Josh you are?
Sure.
I think I know who you are.
Okay, Josh Salzberg? Okay.
70% sure. I was right. Okay. So I think Rabbi Berman is a Gushnik, I believe. I think he... His smich is Rabbi Nut, but I believe he learned there. Unless I'm making that up entirely, but... So...
Do you have... Anybody have any questions?
They're hungry. You didn't serve food beforehand.
I know. I was trying to think where the... I can show you where the candies are, but that's all the picture up of them, but...
That's the one thing we haven't figured out is that how to transfer food through the directly through the internet.
Right. Well, Rabbi Friedman is now teaching, he said, 4 regular classes and 2 resource classes at Hillel Torah. How did you do that? That's so cool.
Mm-hmm.